Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Memorials continue for the 36 people who were killed in the ghost ship warehouse fire in Oakland on Friday night. They were artists, community organizers, teachers, students, musicians, and poets. Nikki Kelber and Carmen Brito lived in the warehouse, and they were asleep when the fire started. They told NBC Bay Area that the fire consumed their home in less than 10 minutes. Here's a clip.
The area that caught on fire had smoke detectors and fire extinguishers.
It did.
Yeah. We had multiple.
Yeah.
Were they working?
You can't really use it to put out a fire if it's on fire. You know, but there were fire extinguishers everywhere.
And anybody who knows anything about fire safety also knows that if there is a fire that is bigger than you, your fire extinguisher is not going to. You can't, at that point, it was about getting out and trying to get people out.
So a lot of people are going to see this and wonder, why live in a place that, you know, is like that, that can go up that quickly?
Have you tried finding a place to rent on Craigslist lately?
No.
It's horrible.
The housing crisis in Oakland, in the Bay Area, it's unprecedented.
It's
unprecedented. And you know what? It was a beautiful and amazing creative space that was our chosen home and our chosen family.
We all looked out for each other. We all helped each other. It wasn't just like, oh yeah, that's my roommate. It's like, this kind of friends. This is the person I dinner with. And it's hard. People don't realize how hard it is to try and find somewhere else to live. It's like, if you make $100 a day, you're competing with tech workers who make $100 an hour. How do you compete for housing? And they decide that they want to live in your neighborhood because it's the trendy neighborhood, it's the cool neighborhood, because it's a little bit edgy, because it's a little bit dangerous.
And that was Nikki Kelber and Carmen Brito speaking to NBC Bay Area. They lived in the ghost ship warehouse. And if you didn't hear the end there, Carmen Brito said, "We're family. We helped each other. People don't realize how hard it is. If you make $100 a day, you're competing with tech workers who make $100 an hour. How do you compete for housing?" The devastating loss of life has raised so many concerns about how victims are being portrayed in the media, the lack of affordable housing, which forces people to live in unsafe spaces like the ghost ship, and the fear that city officials will shut down the already limited live workspaces left in the Bay Area and across the country. And it's already starting to happen. There was a piece in the LA Times today called LA Plans Crackdown on Unsafe Warehouses in the Wake of the Oakland Tragedy. The Real News Network is reporting that following the Oakland fire, Baltimore is evicting residents of a DIY art space. The Bell Foundry was a safe space for people of color and LGBTQ artists. So there are lots of concerns today. A lot of people are having conversations about what's going to happen in the wake of the ghost ship fire. And we got some emails from listeners who were wondering if we were going to cover this. So if you would like to join our conversation, what are your thoughts on what happened? What conversations are you having with your friends and neighbors right now? What do you think still needs to be discussed at this point? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are joined by Hiroko Kurihara, a textile artist and 27-year resident of Oakland. Hiroko launched the 25th Street Collective and co-founded Oakland Makers. For the last year, Hiroko has been a leader in the Uptown Arts District group, which formed when development and zoning proposals were proposed by city staff with no community input. The group then developed a resolution that recognizes the Uptown Arts District, identifies policies and zoning guidelines to preserve Oakland's culture, and implements alternative ways to create affordable, safe art spaces. And Hiroko Kurihara joins us on the line from Oakland. Hi, Hiroko. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us. We are also joined by Nihar Bhatt. Nihar was at the ghost ship party on Friday night, but never entered the building. He is a DJ and producer with the San Francisco-based Surface Tension Collective and a co-owner of the record label Left Hand Path. And Nihar lost 6 friends in the fire. Nihar, thank you so much for joining us, and we're so sorry for your loss.
Thank you very much, Rose.
Well, you know, I don't want to ask you to relive the night of the fire, but I want to ask you what you're comfortable with sharing. You did not go into the warehouse. You were outside. For those of us who, you know, maybe haven't been following this that closely, what do you want to share about what happened that night?
Sure. I think, you know, what I want to share is that what we were gathered there to do was to do an event that really centered the artist. One of the reasons why, we were going, you know, one of the reasons why I was there was, you know, not to sort of have a night of hedonism, like has often been sort of put forward as like sort of what this was, like an illegal rave and all the rest of it. It was to really just go and support my other my friends in the artistic community. Doing an event that sort of didn't have to be it was essentially a way for us to come together as a community. Being there and having gone through the fire, it was one of the most powerless experiences of my life. You know, everybody around, we all wanted to do everything we could, but we found ourselves in a position where, you know, minutes and then hours went by and there was nothing to be done because of the way how quickly the fire started up, and the few people that were able to make it out, including myself, you know, like I said, I didn't enter. I was about to enter the building. I was walking toward it as it started. If it was only a few seconds later, you know, it was really a roll of the dice that I didn't perish, along with so many other people, many of whom I knew personally quite well. Mm.
You lost 6 friends in the fire?
Yes. 6 people I've known for years, and a lot more that I knew a little bit more tangentially. But, you know, certainly there are so many of these deaths impact me and the people around me.
Yeah, I mean, I've been reading some of the profiles, and so many people are connected. Some communities that I'm involved with know people who were lost in the fire, and things get spread so quickly now, and so you learn things so fast. Can you just give us a sense of, you know, how is your community doing right now? It's only been, well, it's almost been a week, but how are people doing?
Yeah, I think nobody has any precedent for how, you know, nobody has any experience in how to deal with something like this. The loss is hard for most people to comprehend and wrap their heads around. So grief comes in waves for a lot of people. And there's just so much to the loss. There's the loss of our close, you know, friends and family, and the grief of remembering their lives, and who they are and their presence in our life. There's the loss of these people who were, you know, so many of them were pillars. Everybody there played a really crucial role in what is our artistic community. Whether they be, you know, the technical sound people that kept the parties going and sort of, you know, were really the bedrock of how these events were able to actually be pulled off successfully. Whether they were, you know, artists or musicians or performers themselves, you know, that have given us, you know, we're all sort of just looking at the body of work that we have from them and thinking about all the things that were coming from them, you know, or whether they, you know, visual artists, all the different ways that we've been robbed of their talents and their leadership. Many of them were teachers of us, of ours, that we wanted to learn so much more from. So the community is, you know, it's hard to describe. Some people are able to cope better than others, but everyone's coping in the best way as possible.
Right.
And we have to look out for each other. There's a lot of caring for each other going on, and I've been, you know, like just constantly moved by all the things that the people are doing for each other. Right now, there are memorials happening, you know, on a regular basis, you know, pretty much every day I'm attending some kind of memorial for my people.
That is Nihar Bhatt. He was at the Ghost Ship Warehouse party on Friday night, but he never entered the building. He lost six of his friends in the fire. We're also joined by Hiroko Kurihara, a textile artist and a 27-year resident of Oakland. Hiroko, you are so connected to the arts community in Oakland. How are you doing right now? And tell us a little bit about what strikes you about the conversations you're hearing in your community.
The only way I've really been able to describe how I'm actually doing is that, you know, the day of the fire and as days transpire, you know, it's kind of like walking around filled with jagged rock, filling my entire body that hopefully with time will round themselves out and, you know, that weight that we carry will hopefully blossom into something that will move us forward. And as time continues to transpire, our community continues to come together and really try to build the community of artists that are yet here, places and ways to remain here and to thrive. That's how I'm doing. Mm.
And Nihar, when you started, you said, you know, we weren't at an illegal rave. We were there to be with friends and to support each other. And what are your thoughts on the media's portrayal of the people who died, the 36 people who died?
I think there's been, you know, the narrative that emerged pretty much immediately, I hadn't even been, I still was dealing with the smoke inhalation from having been standing outside of that place for hours, and the narrative that immediately started to emerge. And I think there have been consistent voices that have carried this on, has been a lot of victim blaming, a lot of, a characterization of the entire thing as a massive disaster, and really painting the entire community as sort of one that sort of has no sense of responsibility, and you know, that like full of drug addicts, all of the rest of it, I don't think it can be any further from the truth. The reality is, you know, this community is one that gathers at spaces like this in order to be able to get outside of the confines of the mainstream club environment or bar environment, sometimes that centers alcohol sales, you know, or where, you know, you really have the only way that you have any way to be part of creating an event or is to have as deep pockets as possible, to bring the biggest possible headliner in, to bring people out. That's all that matters in those cases. But in this particular, we construct things at warehouses in part so that we can make the space our own, so that we can actually have a voice. And I'm a promoter. I don't currently live at a live work space, but being able to create events, in my case, electronic music at, you know, venues like this that are not, you know, they're not traditional, you know, bar run businesses, as, you know, is something that we do in order to sort of create a special kind of experience. And that's what the meaning of doing an event at the Ghost Ship was. So the characterization of it as an illegal rave, it comes with a whole host of connotations that at the center of this was drugs and alcohol. In fact, you know, some people's lives were saved because they left to go to the liquor store. Why? Because there was no bar at this event. You know, there was no bar. You know, there was offered in that way. You know, we were there to center the artists more than ever. You know, it was about the dancing and the music and the experience of being together.
Hiroko, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, here, I just want to first say I'm sorry for your loss. Our 25th Street Collective also had a former member that perished in the fire, and it's amazing what the devastation is for the families, for sure, and friends. I have a thought, though, on the permitting process, because of your question around the media was talking, you know, about potential blame. I think it's also a little challenging to hear our elected officials moving right to enforcement as opposed to education. And I just want to tell a little story of how when we had our collective, we had a musician there who held an event, and that day car broke down and she needed to take a bus for an hour and a half to East Mall Mall to obtain the event permit.
You know, Hiroko, I'm sorry to cut you off, but your line is really bad. We're going to try to call you back, and hopefully we can get rid of all those crackles. Sorry about that. Today we are talking about the Ghost Ship Fire, the warehouse fire that happened on Friday night in Oakland. Memorials are continuing this week for the 36 people who were killed: artists, community organizers, teachers, students, musicians, poets. A lot of questions have been raised in the wake of this fire. A lot of people are talking about the lack of affordable housing. We've obviously been talking about that for years, but there's a sense of urgency now around this. People say, look, this is what happens when we cannot find a place to live. People are forced to live in unsafe spaces. Many, many people in one warehouse have not been brought up to code in many, many years. And artists living in warehouses across the country fear that their buildings might be shut down. And we're already seeing in LA plans of crackdowns, Baltimore, here in the Bay Area. This has already been happening. And so we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on the Ghost Ship Fire and all of the concerns that this has raised? 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Several arts groups, including San Francisco's Presida Eyes and Dance Mission, have been facing displacement threats for years. Studio 17's lease expired despite attempts to renegotiate terms with their landlord. 73 working artists have lost their studio space. In Oakland, the Rock, Paper, Scissors Collective lost its original home where it helped launch the now famous First Friday. So this has already been happening. And if you have any personal stories to share, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And Hiroko Kurihara is back with us, hopefully with a better line. Sorry about that, Hiroko. I think so, yeah.
Our collective member who had followed the procedure to get her permit went to Eastmont Mall, and there's only one officer who issues the event permit, and she had to wait an hour and a half there for him to arrive, and then another hour and a half back. So we're talking about, you know, nearly 5 hours of time to get a $35 permit. So on the one hand, you know, there's this desire to try to do things legitimately for events, and yet there are these very challenging blockades in the process. So, you know, that doesn't often encourage getting permits. That said, you just mentioned how artists are sharing spaces for affordability reasons. It also happens in lots of cultures where people are sharing spaces. Immigrants who are undocumented are sharing spaces in this way. So yep. It truly does come down to affordable housing. In about 20 minutes, the city council is going to hear some recommendations on what to do with examining residents living in unpermitted industrial spaces. And as I was starting to say, I'm, you know, concerned that we're moving towards enforcement as opposed to education and supporting compliance, maybe even with some compassion and some resources. So we're starting to see that come in, I think. The mayor has held a task force that was looking at affordability for artists, living spaces as well as workspaces. There was a recent $1.7 million fund created to support arts organizations and being able to find and secure permanently affordable and safe spaces. So there's some movement, but it does come down to affordability. Downtown right now, we have, you know, 15,000 residential units coming into downtown, and as of the last issue of the downtown plan draft, only 71 of those were affordable. It's true, it's growing, but there's also growing community coalitions that are really advocating and fighting and winning this conversation around needing to provide community with affordable spaces to live and to work.
Right. And when you say that 71 of those units are affordable, do you know how much they're renting for?
I know that because it's being built by a nonprofit affordable housing developer, they're going to be looking at below moderate for sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm really glad you brought up the immigrants, because you're so right. So many immigrants live together. Our intern, who is also a waitress, said that some of the people she works with at a restaurant, one woman in particular, lives with 14 other people because she cannot afford housing on her own.
Yeah.
And so this is so common.
It's a pandemic situation here. You know.
Well, we have a couple of listeners on the line who'd like to share their personal stories. Let's go to Lena in Berkeley. Hi, Lena. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. Thanks so much for having me. I just first want to say that my heart is with everyone who was affected by this fire, and I'm going to really try to say this without being emotional, but I'm a Bay Area artist. My wife, Miriam Kleinstahl, is a Bay Area artist. Rose, I think you've had her on the show before.
Yeah.
We've lived here for 25 years. We're completely, embedded in the arts community here. And our friends lost their daughter in this fire. And I just think that there's the greater picture here is that I think sometimes, artists are blamed for gentrification. Like, we are often the first people to enter neighborhoods that then become less affordable over time. But this is really an issue of the greater inequality and the wealth gap that's growing in our country. And I think it's just very easy when we use the term gentrification to sort of point blame at individuals who have maybe more money or more privilege who end up changing a neighborhood. But really, we wouldn't have this problem of gentrification if we didn't have a growing wealth gap and growing inequality in our country at large. And I guess I just also want to say I believe in artists. I believe in our community. I believe that we have the power to change what's happening right now, because, I think there's something about the timing of this fire coming right after the election. So we're like, our hearts are broken for our community. Our hearts are broken for democracy. And it feels like this moment is so charged right now.
Yeah.
And that we have to take this moment to become engaged in our democracy as artists, as citizens, and to work for a better future of equality for all people. So I'm trying to use this time as a motivator to get beyond the terror that we're feeling about our nation, the grief we're feeling for our community, and say that we are going to participate fully in making the world better now. Like, we cannot afford to not be awake anymore and not be in touch with the pain and the suffering, not only locally, but really around the world.
Right.
It's like, this is our moment to wake up and to be involved.
Well,
my heart goes out to all of you.
Well, Lena, thank you so much for calling. I'm so sorry for your friend's loss. And you're so right. Just yesterday, I was reading a piece in the San Jose Mercury News called More Bay Area Residents Struggling Than Poverty Statistics Indicate. And it points to a new study by the Job Train. This is a nonprofit in Menlo Park, found that close to 30% of the Bay Area's residents are not able to make ends meet as they contend with high housing cost, excuse me, 30% of Bay Area residents, about 1.45 million people, are not, quote, self-sufficient. That's defined as having a stable place to live and being able to cover the basics. And the president of JobTrain, Nora Sabalov, said the problem is much larger than the number of people who are living in poverty in the Bay Area. The poverty rate and the unemployment rate do not tell the full story. They said they did not expect these numbers to be so high. So you're so right about inequality. And we'll get our guests to respond to your call right after the break. Thanks again for calling today. We're talking about the ghost ship fire that happened on Friday night in Oakland. 36 people lost their lives, artists, community organizers, teachers, students, and musicians. They were with friends when plumes of smoke filled the structure. And this has caused really a nationwide conversation about the lack of affordable housing, forcing people to live in unsafe spaces. And we'd love to hear your thoughts. We'll be back after this.
There are many ways you can take part in the conversation today on Your Call. You can call us on the telephone. You may send us an email to feedback at Your Call Radio. You may go to the yourcallradio.org website and leave a comment there. You can also tweet us at Your Call Radio. If you'd like to participate in today's show by telephone, our toll-free number is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are talking about the ghost ship warehouse fire at 31st and International Boulevard in Oakland on Friday night. It took the lives of 36 people, community organizers, artists, teachers, students, and musicians. And the devastating loss of life has added so much urgency to the conversation we're having about the lack of affordable housing and how it's forcing people to live in unsafe spaces like the ghost ship warehouse. And we'd love to hear from you if you'd like to weigh in, if you have a personal story. We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you live in a warehouse, if you have friends who live in a warehouse, or people who just live in a space with a lot of others, immigrants have no choice but to live in spaces with so many other people, waitresses. In fact, like I said, our intern is a waitress, and one of her friends at work lives with 14 people because she cannot afford to live on her own. She pays $600 in a space a month with 14 other people. So if you have any stories about that, if you work on these issues, we'd love to hear from you. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by Hiroko Kurihara, a textile artist and 27-year resident of Oakland. Hiroko launched the 25th Street Collective and co-founded Oakland Makers. Nihar Bhatt was at the party on Friday night, but never entered the building. He lost six friends in that fire. He's a DJ and producer with the San Francisco-based Surface Tension Collective. And Nihar, would you respond to Lena's call, especially her comment about using this time as a motivator?
I think that's really important right now. You know, the thing about obviously the eviction crisis that we've been talking about, and also sort of, you know, the punishment of artists who live in space like this, is that it's not sort of a hypothetical thing that might happen. It's something that was happening before this fire, and it's something that we've already seen intensify. Mm-hmm. One of the things about the disillusion of places like this and the way that they've dwindled is that the very real consequences are that people end up living in places like this and throwing events. One of the things that's been pointed out by a lot of different people is that the ghost ship itself was atypical of places like this. There's been a lot of talk kind of trying to paint every warehouse space with the same brush after this, that they're all extremely unsafe. But the reality is there are a variety of different warehouse spaces. Some of them are very much up to code. Some of them are very safe. A lot of them are safer than some of the traditional venues or houses that you might might be in, because people live there who care so much about the space and work on it. The ghost ship was pretty atypical, but the reality is, you know, just a very concrete example is that this party that happened Friday night, a lot of people were aware of the danger of the ghost ship, but the reality is there were a couple other places that this party probably would have taken place in if it had happened, say, last year. But several of those places, all of the residents were evicted in the last year. So, you know, those were the alternatives for us, the alternatives that were much safer, much more willing. But the reality is every couple months you hear about another, you know, live, work, artistic space, community space getting evicted. And that means that the options dwindled. You know, so right now we have to, you know, the opportunity is being seized upon by landlords, by developers, by all of those forces that want to sort of colonize increased amounts of space in the city, and all of the evictions and moves that we've heard about are there. You know, we have to take this opportunity to, you know, it's not enough just to say that we want to protect people in the future. People need protection now. Hmm. You know, the intensification is happening, and we have to mobilize right now to protect people. And the mayor and the city government needs to actually actively protect people and not just say we're not going to have a witch hunt. Just tell us that there's no witch hunt. When in fact, that those forces are already mobilizing. They were before this, and there's just an intensification now because they've always had an interest in sort of crowding out this type of space.
Yeah, and we've done so many shows about the arts community and these issues. Last year, the San Francisco Arts Commission surveyed more than 500 artists. 77% said they've been displaced from their home, workspace, or both. Oakland also conducted a survey of 900 artists. The majority said workspace and housing costs present the biggest challenge to being an artist in Oakland. And Hiroko, what would you add to Nihar's comments and then Lena, who said we need to use this time as a motivator?
Well, I want to just say, too, that, you know, artists tend to be the intrepid ones that do start the gentrification and transitional neighborhood process. And then a few years later, like we did with the Collective, faced a 40% rent increase after 7 years of being in the space and having, you know, provided a lot of vitality and support to artisans in the First Friday area there on 25th Street. And so that really led to a group of us forming in the Uptown area to not just designate the area with the name of the Uptown Arts District, but to propose some real policy changes, some zoning, like cultural zoning overlays that could be applied as the downtown develops to ensure that there is affordability built in, that there is a concentration of the authentic arts entities and arts enterprises that are currently there to be able to remain. And when you introduce something like policy as opposed to just naming a district, it, you know, naturally puts hairs on end for people who have purchased recently into the property or in the process of developing property, or may have held onto property for a long time that they want to transfer to their children. So right now we're at the point where we actually had our resolution to name the district with policy guidelines that wouldn't have been enacted with the passing of the resolution. It was simply calling to bring together stakeholders that would look at what the policy guidelines could be, you know, that would be in some cases mutually beneficial, but really implement some of the alternatives that we were looking at to save art in Oakland. On October 25th, we were scheduled for Life Enrichment Committee to review, and our resolution was co-sponsored by council members McElhaney, Rebecca Kaplan, and Annie Campbell Washington. Day of, you know, a couple phone calls later, potentially by developers who were concerned about the resolution details, had the item pulled. And so we've now regrouped. We're conducting smaller stakeholder meetings, but we're pushing forward. We need to pull together what we're calling, temporarily right now, the Uptown Arts Council that will be made up of a broad range of stakeholders, of property owners, developers, artists, arts entities, and nonprofits, and small business owners and residents in the area, because we want to demonstrate that we can move forward with policy changes that will require to build in affordability.
I just want to say,
it's not impossible. The city of Seattle has accomplished this, you know, and the timing is absolutely critical, because it's not just, you know, in the uptown area, but the Black Arts Movement and Business District. In East Oakland, we're looking at a Black Culture Zone at around 57th and East 14th. Many, many other areas in Oakland.
I was going to ask you if you can be specific about the kinds of policy changes that you would like to see. What happened in Seattle?
So in Seattle, they identified two districts. They were very clear about ensuring that there's affordability as development transpires. In our policy, let me just finish too, that they provide resources, and they ended up creating a citywide nonprofit that would support the creation and growth of additional cultural arts districts. They help funnel funding and technical assistance, and to a certain degree, I think that, you know, with CAS and the mayor's office now is looking at implementing some of the alternative strategies we came up with our own task force citywide. But with our policies, we're looking at, for example, apportioning a certain part of the ground floor below market rates. If it's a nonprofit, it would remain affordable for maybe up to 99 years. You know, we're not talking 5, 10, 15-year leases here. We're looking at being able to have property owners, for example, with the pressure of development, perhaps transfer some of their development rights above ground to other parts of Oakland and still gain the investment back that they might have by selling to a developer that would just do market rate housing. So, you know, if we can look at how we can continue to support artists and arts enterprises in the area there, I think we'll be able to move forward. I mean, there's another framework that we're partnering with and paying close attention to is the statewide effort, where there's the California Arts Council is looking at creating cultural arts districts. You know, there we might be able to identify some tax benefits to artists in areas. Seattle did this too, where in certain areas or certain districts, there wouldn't be a sales tax applied to artisanal goods that are sold. Likewise, you know, there could be a county property tax benefit to owners who commit to supporting artists and manufacturers.
Well, we'll have to, I was just looking, there's a lot of articles about what's going on in Seattle. We'll have to do a show about that and find out how they were able to accomplish these different policies. Nihar, yep. Before we go back to calls, did you go to a meeting last night in Oakland that was focused on these issues?
Yeah, I mean, the meeting last night was had a lot of different people coming together, that some of whom were part of part of many of these artists and residents, you know, living spaces. Some of them are musicians. You know, everyone is concerned about responding to this crisis and actually turning the tide and fighting against some of these attacks. And there are a range of things that are being discussed. One of the most incredible things is the way that people are coming out of the woodwork to talk about how we can improve every space out there. So, you know, people are self-organizing to sort of on the spot right now, because there's nothing, you know, everything is very urgent right now. You know, there's no, like, and things are moving very quickly. And one of the things discussed is how people can self-organize and, you know, and get get every space that isn't up to code up to code, and offer, you know, people are offering resources left and right on, you know, how we can actually, you know, bring people together to sort of make sure that we secure the safety of our own residents. Because one of the things that really important, one of the things about punishing renters is that, you know, and punishing also promoters and artists who you know, who work in these spaces or put on events in these spaces, is that we are the ones with the biggest, we're the ones who died. We're the ones who have the biggest interest in creating safety. And, you know, and there is a tremendous amount of energy around trying to do that right now and creative ideas. You know, additionally, I think there's a lot of concern about, you know, every day now we're hearing about new threats against different spaces, eviction notices, people, you know, landlords and others seizing on this to sort of go after spaces that they don't understand, or they see some benefit in evicting them and maybe remaking them as something else. And I think that there's a lot of interest in some kind of either amnesty or moratorium to stop either the red tagging of buildings so that it doesn't open the door to evictions, or to stop to just actually stop in its tracks what's happening right now, because of the way, you know, because we've seen this happen over and over again. It's not a mystery to us. When there's some questions raised about space, almost always we've seen evictions follow before anything major is done about it, and we want to stop that, so that actually the people that have the biggest interest in making safety a reality in these spaces can get to work and do that. Mm.
That is Nihar Bhatt. He was at the party on Friday night at the Ghost Ship Warehouse in Oakland, but he never entered the building. He lost 6 friends in the fire. He's a DJ and producer with the San Francisco-based Surface Tension Collective. Hiroko Kurihara is a textile artist and a 27-year resident of Oakland. Hiroko launched the 25th Street Collective and is a co-founder of Oakland Makers. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's go to Bernadette in San Francisco. Hi, Bernadette.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, thank you.
Great. I just wanted to kind of follow up on all of the thoughts about the live workspaces in San Francisco. I run a warehouse and live workspace in the Mission, and most of my friends in the area have been pushed out through evictions, and really there's no spaces like this at all. Luckily, my space is actually very safe and does have sprinklers and all of that, but I've actually had to go really underground and only use it as a work and rehearsal space. We do very few events, and they're very private, unfortunately, just for fear of, you know, someone coming after us. So it's been an interesting journey just listening to all of the things that have happened in Oakland and people reaching out to me and sort of like thanking me for sort of continuing to lead the way. But it is incredibly difficult. I've been doing it for going on 9 years. So it's definitely a tragedy what happened in Oakland. But I want to encourage any artists in San Francisco that there are ways to do it. We just have to keep safety in mind. But I really do wish that there was a way to create spaces for us to continue to live and work at a lower rate without having to deal with developers, politicians, and corporate greed.
Well, thank you so much. And a related email from Andy. He writes, a friend suggested that a campaign to make these live-work warehouse spaces safe should be the first step, and cities should make a pledge that no evictions will take place as a result. I propose that our city governments, which have responded so poorly to the housing crisis, fund such a program and pay for it with business taxes on the hugely profitable tech sector, which is largely fueling the same crisis. Thank you for the email, Andy. Let's go through a few more callers, and then we'll get responses from our guests. Let's go next to Mark in Berkeley. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. I'm concerned that the longtime movement of artists in residency, this is a San Francisco-based movement that I'm sorry that your last caller is not aware of, I guess. But the developers for a long time were using sprinklers and other types of code concerns that apply to, like, normal residential housing. And they were using them on these warehouse commercial spaces to get the artists out so that they could be developed.
Mm.
So they did successfully pass artists in residency waivers. And now these places were inspected, and, you know, they're safe. I mean, this is not like the Oakland situation. I mean, clearly these people need to step up their inspection game on fires. But the movement in San Francisco really needs to cross the bay, because once these spaces become legitimate, then they're not hiding, dodging inspectors and all that kind of stuff that I believe was part of this tragedy. So once again, I recommend check out the historical artist in residency movement legislation in San Francisco, which was behind some of the great warehouse artist collectives, Project Arto, you know, and many others. So I recommend people consider that, because this is not a new game. This is a long-time story. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you. According to the Chronicle, the Ghost Ship building has not been inspected in 3 decades. And there are so many things happening across the country. Reuters has a piece right now called U.S. Cities Enlist Public's Help in Wake of Deadly Oakland Fire. In Portland, elected leaders want to require sprinklers before a building can host special events. In Los Angeles, a council member is calling on citizens to report unsafe buildings. In Baltimore, officials are condemning buildings and ousting tenants called the Bell Foundry. This is a space for LGBTQ people. So this is happening very quickly, and I'm sure artists across the country are really organizing to respond to all of this. Let's get a few more calls in, and then we'll go to our guest today. Let's go to Joe in San Leandro. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Hey, how are you guys? Listen, so I live outside of the area now. I used to be here. I used to be a promoter. One of the things that people outside of the Bay Area don't realize is they say, how does this happen? Well, it happens because one of the biggest things about artists is they seek out alternatives. When they can't see a way to do something within the norm, they look at what available resources are there. And these waste of space to them, a warehouse that's empty where they could go in, where they could work with their friends, with their peers, with new ideas grouping together, is how they came up with the way to move forward. And it's also the attraction. It's the thing that people want to see. We want to be involved in the culture of art. We lose our humanity when we don't have that. And that's why we have people going into what we consider not a great space, you know, something that doesn't look beautiful on the outside. But the beauty of what's inside and the beauty of the people and the culture that's there is what's the driver, and it's what's going to keep these things alive.
We can't
blame. We can't go out and look at blaming the victims.
Well, thank you so much. And one more email to add to that from a listener. I, too, am grieving the loss of life from the fire. I agree that the crisis played a big part, but I want to be very respectfully suggest that the conversations about evictions, slumlords, and rent hikes include not just artists, but the many families and people, mostly people of color, immigrants, and other vulnerable communities with little visibility and high risk of reporting dangerous living conditions are included in these conversations. There is potential for many communities to come together to put pressure on Bay Area cities and Oakland to act, but that can only happen if all communities are seen and heard. Hiroko, what are your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, your caller's point around what does a healthy community really look like and feel like. When we talk about diversity, it really has to be people from all backgrounds with all kinds of levels of income and even no income to be able to share our city equitably. And, I'll mention that we recently did in the city hire somebody from Seattle to head the Department of Race and Equity, and I'm hoping that, you know, she will be part of this conversation in How do we build in, for example, not just these fees that are issued to developers for their impact that would contribute to creating affordable housing, like for every unit of market rate housing, eventually they'll be contributing around $24,000 per unit towards affordable housing. But more likely than not, that housing is going to be built somewhere else. So we don't even have this inclusion or inclusionary policies that say, let's build projects that mix the incomes of the people who live there and have people be living together. And so there is this huge equity piece that's missing here. Mm. And when we create cultural arts districts, that doesn't exclude anybody. You know, we're hoping that then the conversation and the enactment of affordability then will apply to residences in the areas that will keep the fabric of the existing community intact.
And Nihar, we have about a minute left. Final thoughts from you?
Yeah, I think the conversation is, there's an opening for this conversation. I think one aspect we didn't necessarily cover as much as, you know, many of the majority of the people whose lives were lost didn't necessarily live in the space or spaces like this. Mm-hmm. They were attending events, and I think that there's also a necessity for a space for late night, you know, music events, late mm-hmm. night dance. That was, you know, that type of event is going to find a space, and whether or not that's a safe space, or it's a space that is, or it's a space that people compromise for, is something that we're going to be that, you know, it's a matter of life and death. It's no longer a frivolous ask or something on top of the bread and butter picture, the issues of housing, but it's actually, you know, a real matter of life and death whether or not we were able to provide space for that kind of celebration and dance as well. So I think that's another aspect of this conversation that needs to be explored
Yeah, it's so true, and thank you for pointing that out. It's a really good point. Nihar Bhatt was at the Ghost Ship party on Friday but did not enter the building. He lost 6 friends in the fire. He's a DJ and a producer. Hiroko Kurihara is a textile artist and a 27-year resident of Oakland. Hiroko launched the 25th Street Collective. Hiroko and Nihar, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, and thank you for your phone calls and emails. Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.